Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Will Schwalbe, and you're listening to But That's Another Story from Macmillan Podcasts. In Virginia Woolf's novel, The Waves, she writes, "Happiness is in the quiet, ordinary things. A table, a chair, a book with a paper knife stuck between the pages, and the petal falling from the rose, and the light flickering as we sit silent." And recently, I got to talking about happiness, creative freedom, and a hint of magic with today's guest.
I'm Gretchen Rubin, and I'm a writer and podcaster, and my subject is human nature.
Gretchen Rubin is the author of The Happiness Project, a book about her year-long quest to be more fulfilled, which sparked happiness movements around the world. Her other recent bestsellers include The Four Tendencies and Outer Order, Inner Calm. She's also the co-host of the podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin.
I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, and still go back there all the time. My parents both still live there. And I had sort of the very typical, traditional suburban childhood. I had one sister. We had a dog, a sandbox in the backyard. So it was just sort of like a very kind of just what you think of when you think of a childhood.
And older or younger sister?
She's 5 years younger than I am. Yeah, sister.
And what kind of dog?
A schnauzer, a miniature schnauzer named Paddywhack, because of the knick-knack Paddywhack, give your dog a bone.
She remembers something unusual about her neighborhood.
The most interesting thing about my main childhood house is I actually lived on state line. Kansas City is a metropolitan area between Missouri and Kansas. And when you were young, the idea that you can cross the street and go into Kansas, or like you can be in a car and if like your dad will move to the middle of the street, you know, you're straddling two states. That was very exciting.
Gretchen also found herself crossing boundaries of place and time through reading.
I was sort of in the spirit of Hermione Granger. I was a real academic child. I read all the time. I kind of had to force myself to go outside. I think my parents had a rule at one point that I had to spend at least a half an hour outside when I was a child. You know, I really did read a lot. That was my main activity.
She was drawn to two stories in particular.
One is Charlotte's Web, because I just wept 4 days without stopping when Charlotte dies. So I remember that very, very vividly. I remember that whole scene very vividly. And also the Little House books. And every year at Christmas, I was given a new hardback in the series. And those I would play. I had like a prairie dress. I was really fascinated with that world.
So what was it in the books that meant so much to you?
Well, one thing is the books do interesting things. Like Laura starts off very young, and then the books get more complex as she gets older in a way that is unusual. So I think part of it is as I was reading them, Laura was sort of keeping pace with me, or I was keeping pace with her. And it was interesting to me. I mean, they are complex, like the way Ma and Pa have different views about civilization and about kind of going west and, Mary going blind. That was like a huge, I was fascinated by that. I was fascinated by someone going blind and what that would have been like. I was really interested in Helen Keller. And then just the sense of just the wildness of it and the unpredictability.
Now, I'm curious. I want to go back to the driving back and forth between Kansas and Missouri across the state line.
Or just running back and forth.
There's something sort of magical about that.
There is.
And how did you feel as a kid about literature that involved magic?
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Love it to this day. Still read it constantly. Adult magic, children's magic. Yes, I love any book that has to do with magic. Especially, every kind. High fantasy magic or the kind where it's very, it's part of the day-to-day and there just happens to be magic.
Gretchen eventually left Missouri and the magical state line for college. There, she came across an author who would become her guide.
I took a class, a Virginia Woolf class at Yale, and was very interested in Virginia Woolf. And she has written voluminous diaries. I mean, like 6 or 7 giant volumes. And this is a collection of extracts that Leonard Woolf made of her diaries before they were published, but after her death, that are only related to her writing life.
A writer's diary includes observations from 23 years of Virginia Woolf's life, starting in 1918 and ending 3 weeks before her death in 1941.
You see, like, her, you know, we all have kind of obsessions or, you know, things that we keep coming back to. You see how she's kind of having the same realization over and over, as one does. Or, you know, you see even Virginia Woolf was, like, very upset. Like, how many books have I sold? You're like, you're Virginia Woolf. How can you possibly care how many copies of The Waves you sold? But, and yet there she is, like, diligently writing it down day after day. But then she also talks much more about kind of her creative, her thinking and what she was trying to do with each book and why she was led to each project. And it's just fascinating.
Gretchen first read a writer's diary at a confusing stage of her life.
Well, at that time, I had no idea that I was going to be a writer myself. I had no idea what I was going to do, which looking back on it seemed awfully strange that I never, you know, and then at some point I was like, well, I'll just go to law school because I'm good at reading and writing and it'll keep my options open and I can always change my mind later. And, you know, it's just like, it just seemed like a good default thing.
She became a lawyer, but continued to hold a writer's diary close.
My copy is so battered because it's over the years I just keep reading it. And now I almost just pick it up and leaf through it at random and don't even try to read it sequentially.
Soon, she began to see a new path emerge for her as a writer.
And I just was like, okay, well, I really want to do this. And at this point, I would rather fail as a writer than succeed as a lawyer. So why don't I see if I can give it a shot?
When we come back from the break, Gretchen throws herself into writing, with the reflections of Virginia Woolf at hand to light the way. Be sure to stay through the end of the episode to hear a fun new segment, too.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
As Gretchen began her first book proposal, she often turned to Virginia Woolf's diary for words of encouragement and advice.
She's constantly reminding herself, yes, you're really upset about that negative review, but get over yourself and you'll forget. I mean, she's constantly like, oh, remind, she'll say like, and I leave these notes to myself, you know, in case later I'm lost, like get some gentle exercise, do some reading. That's the way to get back into it. Yeah, and she often does. And then she's got this, there's this song, Raggle Taggle Gypsy, which is like a traditional song. And it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And she refers to it a couple of times in this very interesting way where she'll be talking about all her worries and then she'll say like, but where, what care I for my goose feather bed? I'm off with the raggle taggle gypsy o's. And sort of bringing in this song in this very weird, interesting way. Just sort of saying like, don't get, like, just leave it all behind and just go do what you want.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it is really. Yeah. Yes. Oh, go listen to the song. It's a really good song.
She appreciated Woolf's approach to work.
She would often do a thing where she would write kind of a major work, and then she would do sort of a playful book. So she would write something huge like The Waves or Mrs. Dalloway or To the Lighthouse, but then there would be a book like Flush or a book like Orlando, which sort of started out playful and then ended up kind of against her. She didn't really intend for it to get as serious as she did, or something like Three Guineas. And what's interesting is you would see her kind of, and I have this issue myself, where I'll be working on something very hard, and then it's almost like a hooky project. I'm going to go play hooky and work on this other thing, and it's kind of a relief, and it's kind of cheating, but it's kind of working because I am working on a book. But it's kind of cheating because it's not my main book. And just seeing her go back and forth and how she did that in her career and it showed me that, like, everything doesn't have to be of the same weight.
Gretchen began to allow herself more creative freedom.
With a lot of art, you see that what people do as kind of play sometimes does succeed better. And it, certainly you see this in children's literature. It's very striking how many kind of eminent writers, now their adult works are forgotten. E.B. White is much more known for his children's books. C.S. Lewis, certainly. J.R.R. Tolkien. J.M. Barrie. There's a lot of people where Elizabeth Enright, Frances Hodgson Burnett. I don't think at the time they would have thought, oh, this is the book that's going to make me endure for decades. And so sometimes maybe that spirit of play allows people to sort of tap into something. Or maybe it's lighter and therefore more people can get access to it.
She became fascinated by the concept of making life more joyful.
I was stuck in the crowded crosstown bus in the pouring rain, and I looked out the window and I was like, what do I want from life anyway? And I thought, well, I want to be happy. And then I thought, I don't spend any time thinking about whether I am happy or if I could be happier. And I thought, I should do a happiness project. And I went out the next, and so I got really interested, like I do, and I went to the library, got this giant stack of books. What is happiness? What can you make yourself better? There's the ancient wisdom, there's the science, there's, you know, pop culture, all these things. And I was just going to do it for myself. Could I be happier? And I realized I did read a lot of, I love children's literature and young adult literature. I read it as an adult, but I never really talked about it because it didn't fit my idea of myself as kind of a sophisticated, discerning reader who could read challenging books. And so I never really talked about it. And then I realized, like, I don't have so many interests and passions that I can just sweep this under the rug. And as part of my happiness project, one of the things was, can I bring it into my life more?
Gretchen decided to start a book club for adults who wanted to read books written for young people. She called it Kidlet.
When you start listening and looking, I realized there were other people who really love children's literature and young adult literature. And it's a taste. It's like, I don't really like mysteries. A lot of people like mysteries. I don't really like mysteries. It's not because they're good or bad or I'm right or wrong or whatever. It's just a taste that some people have. It's just really about people who love it as its own thing. And so it's just been the greatest engine of joy in my life.
The idea of a writer wanting to make herself happier, we all want to make ourselves happier, but I guess when we think back of Virginia Woolf, we think of someone who perhaps at the end was not a very happy person.
Well, you know, it's interesting because people have said that, because I always, one of the things I've written about is my spiritual masters. And so one of my spiritual masters is Virginia Woolf. And somebody said, many people have said, it's odd that you would pick her because they're, and I think it's really unfortunate that she does have this association with unhappiness, because certainly she fell into despair and she had many periods in her life where she was sort of in a despairing place. But like, if you read even a writer's diary, which isn't the whole thing, but she'll often say how happy she is or what a happy time it was, or how happy she was with her husband. And certainly she has unhappiness too, but I feel like she does have, and you know, she's always trying to capture the moment and the intensity of kind of life and the everyday and sort of the, you know, the moment. And so I feel like, to me, she's a very happy writer, or at least a very like a vital. So that's sort of been overshadowed by her suicide. But I think if you look at the whole of her, there's a lot of happiness there as well.
Gretchen returns to a writer's diary whenever she needs to be reminded to be gentle to herself and to make space for play when she writes.
Virginia Woolf often will say, like, I'm not good at this. She's like, I can do situations, I can't write plots. Or as she said, like, I wrote this book, it's all of my faults and all of my strengths. And so she's very aware, like, there's certain things I, Virginia Woolf, can do. There's certain things I can't do. And I feel like, well, that's kind of refreshing. I mean, sometimes you're like, I'm not good at this, but I can be good at other things. And, you know, even Virginia Woolf wasn't good at everything. So I find that very reassuring, too. It's like, I'm not good at metaphor, but that's okay.
What else as a writer are you not good at?
Well, I'm not good at fiction, so that's a huge thing. I cannot do that. I will sometimes be. I've written 3 bad novels, but they're all novels of ideas. They're not. I'm not interested. I can't write about character, so which is like what fiction is. And I'm not good at metaphor. I'm not good at things where, and I'm fascinated by this, where things. I'm very linear, which is a strength in some circumstances, but where things suddenly break or things become unexpected. I'm not good at that. I'm really good at putting one foot in front of the other. What I'm good at is also taking a giant subject and distilling it. That's my favorite thing. Or observing the obvious, which is what I try to do, which is to observe the obvious. That is not easy.
What are you good and not good at in life?
I'm kind of a killjoy. I am kind of a killjoy.
I don't think of you as a killjoy.
Well, that's nice. Thank you, Will. I can be kind of rigid. So I'm not that fun-loving. I'm probably not a good person to, like, kick back with. But, like, I really want you to get enough sleep. And I really want to get enough sleep myself. So that's, you know, again, strengths and weaknesses. What am I not good at? Oh, there's so many things I'm not good at. Oh, I don't like games. That's something. Or I'm a terrible athlete. Can't sing. Not interested in music. Don't care about food. See, I'm a killjoy. It's like, don't I just sound dreadful?
And what are you good at?
I'm good at noticing things, I think. I think I am good at noticing things. I'm very curious. I guess that's probably the thing. I like to learn.
Traits like making sure people get enough sleep,
yeah,
and breaking things, projects down into manageable tasks is so the opposite of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're so drawn
mm-hmm.
to magic
mm-hmm.
in the books you read.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't feel like, but see, the thing that's interesting is that I think for people, and I think about this a lot because I've thought a lot about kind of discipline, because I have my 4 tendencies framework where I divide people into 4 categories. I think people like me who sort of tend to be very disciplined, to the outside, it can look very cramped and constraining, and you might think that I would yearn for magic as a way to break free. But actually, from the inside, people like upholders, as I call them, like would say discipline is my freedom, and they actually feel free and energized by their discipline. And so it doesn't feel like something that you need to escape from. That's hard for other people to understand. Like, they kind of want us to loosen up on ourselves because they think we would enjoy that, whereas in fact we often don't enjoy that. So I don't feel like I need magic as a way to escape from that part of myself. But I do love all the possibilities that it permits.
Before we end this episode, we're trying something new, a lightning round question segment. Let's get started.
What's your favorite library in the world?
Ooh, New York Society Library, which is a block from my house.
If you could be any character in a book, who would you be?
Oh, gosh. Ooh.
Oh, who was the first one who came to mind?
I'm trying to remember, what is the name of the main character in Graceling? Because she has like the power to prevail. Okay, Kristen Cashore, the main character in Kristen Cashore's book Graceling, which is an amazing book.
Because
she can do anything. Like, she's graced, so she cannot be conquered.
What would you be if you weren't a writer?
I don't know. I don't think I would be a lawyer. I asked a friend of mine this, and she works in wealth management. She said, I would either be the governor of a small state or I would own a fine linen shop. And I was like, you would do both those things very well. I could see you going in either direction, but I don't know. I feel like I'm already on my alternative path, so I don't know what the next alternative would be.
What is the one thing, implement, creature comfort, that you can't write without?
Other than like a computer,
yes.
I have to have a computer. You know what I have, which I use constantly, is a book weight, because I'm always taking notes, and a book weight is just this leather strap that has weights on both ends, and so it holds your book open. That is something where I really, when I'm in a note-taking phase, I use that thing all day long, and it's just the perfect solution for that problem of a book that won't stay open to the correct page.
If you had to choose one place to write in forever, what would that place be?
My office, yeah.
What about your office?
Just that's where my brain is, kind of. Yeah. But my laptop is my brain. So I you know, as long as I have my, I guess my laptop is my, is what I would say.
Your go-to reading spot, your favorite place in the world to read?
On the couch in our, like, you know, main family room.
Is a book, are you completely, what's the word?
Supine.
Supine, yeah, with it over your head?
Yeah. No, I'm a stretched out reader for sure. Or I read in bed. If it's cold, I read in bed so that I can have the covers over me.
And finally, meet any author, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. Oh gosh. Any author. I might say Samuel Johnson. I love Samuel Johnson, and he's such a quirky guy. I would love to see what he was actually like in person. He clearly was extraordinarily charismatic. I'm very interested. I would love to meet Benjamin Franklin. I love Benjamin Franklin. I just wonder what he was like in person.
But That's Another Story is produced by Christy Westgaard. Thanks to Gretchen Rubin. If you'd like to learn more about the books we've mentioned in this week's episode, you can find out more in our show notes. You can also find a transcript of this episode and past ones on LitHub. If you've been enjoying the show, please be sure to rate and review on iTunes. It really helps others discover the program. And subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. If there's a book that changed your life, we want to hear about it. Send us an email at anotherstory@macmillan.com. I'm Will Schwalbe. Thanks so much for listening.